Right here on my left is Greg Parra, the Democratic candidate for District 72, Florida House seat, currently occupied by Republican Ray Pilon, which I said earlier. Welcome, Greg.
Well, good morning, Lou.
First of all, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing these days?
Well, currently, we have a jewel here in Sarasota, Manatee County, which is called a Veterans Court, and I am the advocate for any veteran from our Vietnam Wars all the way through our returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan, and I happen to be one of the combat vets that have recently returned. And what happens is anyone who comes in contact with the legal system, we work with a bunch of community partners and the VA to put them into diversion programs instead of incarcerating them. And basically what happens is when the vets came home from Vietnam, we were on the wrong side of history, and that currently is, you know, contributing to the homeless problems that we have here in Sarasota, but we're now on the right hand side of history.
We have heard that when we had homeless advocate Robert Marbot on. He did predict that when all the soldiers came back from Iraq and Afghanistan, there would be a spike in homeless people because they do make up, unfortunately, a large portion.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. All right, now let's get to the topic at hand. You are running against Ray Pilon. You are going to try to go into, the Florida House as a Democrat. What do you see are, the top issues that need to be dealt with?
Well, the first thing I point out is I'm a married father of six children, a returning veteran from Afghanistan, and I have a lot of skin in the game here. I have a daughter in middle school. I have a daughter in high school. I have several sons in the university still, and then two adult children. So when I look at this, I say, okay, well, education is huge for us. Even a bigger issue in my mind and talking to the voters is women's issues.
Okay, because you have daughters.
Well, right now my daughters can go out and work, which one of them is, and won't make the same amount of money as their brother.
True.
One of my daughters down in Siesta Village, of all places, was attacked, and there's not strong enough legislation on violence against women, and we can see it's rampant in the military, it's rampant all over the country, so that's something we're really looking at. And, even though I'm against abortion, I'm even more against the government having the right to be able to tell a woman what she can or can't do between a decision she makes with a doctor. So women's rights are a big issue. And, the economy. I take a look at the economy and I say the first thing we could do is if we expanded Medicaid, which by the way, would save the state money.
Yes.
If you do my wife's a CPA and we've run a lot of the numbers on
this. Yes.
But I look at this as it's political terrorism. And I'm qualified to talk about terrorism because I was in Afghanistan and I witnessed it firsthand and a victim of that. But it strikes fear in the hearts of people. So if you're poor and you're one of the 1.2 million people that don't have insurance, and according to Gwen McKenzie, the CEO of Sarasota Memorial, we have almost 80,000 people that pour into these ERs and burden the system because we don't have that, all because of political terrorism, because it's ideology. It says we're not going to let the federal government come into the state, yet they turn around and they have what's called ALEC, American Legislation Exchange.
Yes.
And that is model legislation, and we can hit on that, but that's no more than federal, too, because it's a national thing. It's one piece of legislation that goes to every capital, and they try to bring that into the state. So with political ideology, we end up with terrorism. If you're gay, you should be afraid. If you're a woman here in Florida, you should be afraid. If you're the middle class without jobs, 22,000 jobs estimate would be brought into the state just with Medicaid.
That's right. And people do have to understand. They want to point out the failings of healthcare.gov and the Affordable Care Act, and it's far from a perfect piece of legislation, but efforts like this by Republican governors like Rick Scott, and the Republican legislature, the Republican-led legislature here in Florida, have caused it not to be as effective as it could be, or as it should be, and I am still baffled by their reasoning. Why don't they want everybody to have health care?
Well, it undermines the democratic process if you think about it that way. Here you have a governor who says I'm the jobs governor, yet he doesn't allow Medicaid that would immediately bring in jobs. here you have a governor who says, you know, we're not going to, he cringes when he hears that the minimum wage would go up, even though almost 67% of women that are mothers and wives would be the recipients of higher income and would positively impact the quality of life for all Floridians with something like that. And the list goes on of what this governor is doing, and I find it really appalling that because of ideology, we would deny the citizens that we're representing. So I really think it's a cowardly approach, and it's like Corey was talking about with special interest. If you follow the money, which I always do, you know, we'll look at the intrusion of private prisons coming into Florida. Now think about this. They spent millions of dollars to fund Rick Scott, another Republican.
Sure.
Okay? And now what the state does is we say, we're going to guarantee you a certain fill rate. Well,
right.
Wow. So you look at Ray Pilon, and he's introducing two pieces of legislation this session. One piece is to make it easier to take juveniles and put them into residential, private residential places. I mean, just yesterday we had a riot with a whole bunch of kids in the juvenile center. It's just nuts. I mean, what they're trying to do is they're trying to make more money, relieve the burden, because that's who's financing the campaigns.
You know, that's absolutely right. You know, the whole private prison issue. But I just want to say one thing about raising the minimum wage. Most of the studies, and almost all of the studies that I've seen, is that when you raise the minimum wage, it doesn't decrease jobs. It's a net gain in jobs, because as soon as those people, the money that those folks make extra gets spent immediately. It's like giving a huge shot in the arm to the economy. And as any of us who really want to be honest about jobs, government incentives and tax breaks don't create jobs. What creates jobs is, consumer demand. And anything you can do to, increase consumer demand is going to create more jobs. But, the business about the private prisons, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you talked about being gay and being afraid in Florida, and being a woman and being afraid in Florida. Well, this whole private prison thing, if you were, a young man and you're, under 25, you also better be afraid of being in Florida, because, if they catch you walking across the street the wrong way, you're going to get thrown in prison.
Oh, absolutely. If you're a person of color, you still should be frightened.
Yes. Absolutely. Speaking about education, there is still a debate about Common Core going on. And Common Core, kind of puzzles me a little bit, because, unlike a lot of issues in the news these days, it isn't drawn, straight down party lines. There are conservatives that like it, conservatives that hate it, liberals that like it, and liberals that don't like it, and they all have their own reasons. How do you feel about Common Core?
Well, I've talked to Dan Kennedy, who's headmaster at Sarasota Military Academy, so we have a charter perspective, and I've spoken with Pat Gardner, the Sarasota County Union, mm-hmm. and Lori White. And I take a look at this, and I talk to my daughters, who are still going through some of this now in middle and high school. Mm-hmm. And my own take is the military arguably would be one of the best-run organizations in the world. And we have, in the military, national standards, so that no matter where you are in the world and you are going to a next level in your career, everybody is tested the same way. Okay? How is it that we want to let the states do that, so that when you decide to move somewhere else in the United States, you have to first worry about what is crime like where you're moving and what is the education like? We shouldn't have to worry about that. How do we measure ourselves on a global scale if we have 50 different marks and we're teaching to the test instead of teaching kids the critical thinking that we need? So Common Core, just like Obamacare, just like Social Security, starts out and it molds into what it needs to be, and I think Common Core will do that.
So in other words, it is sort of on the right track. It seemed to me fundamentally, in theory anyway, to be a good idea, like what you say, to have one universal standard through the United States. I was fortunate enough to have a public school education in Massachusetts, which in a lot of states is, would cost somebody $10,000 a year. You got to go to private school.
That's right.
to get that good an education. And I would like to see everybody get that, whereas my son went through the Florida system, and while we were very, very pleased, pleasantly surprised, right up through, you know, King Middle School. You went to school in Manatee County, you know, in the
high daughter's at King.
Yeah, even though, you know, he was in, you know, AP Plus and took a lot of AP classes, you know, Manatee High, you know, was a little shaky, you know, and I would like to see those standards raised. The whole FCAT era, though, I think was a disaster.
Absolutely.
And this whole idea of teaching to a test is, you know, and I know a lot of teachers, too, is, you know, sort of counterproductive to critical thinking, don't you think?
Right, and the things my daughter says, beforehand they would have to memorize facts. And
right.
And now they're engaged in discussions, which really happens in the real world. It prepares them to have discussions, share ideas, think about the implications of those ideas, and then put them into practice in the classroom. So fundamentally, Common Core, and you're right, we can't point to just Republicans, and I never use Republicans. Republican leadership is more accurate, because I've been walking and talking and meeting, and I have many independents and many Republicans that share the same views, because it's kind of sexy when you look at President and Congress and Senate, but the majority of the quality of life issues happen at the state level, yet it's not looked at as serious as all these other races. So, you know, we can just look at what happens is the voter apathy and not turning out. We deserve what we get. We're a democracy. So if half of the people don't even come out and vote, that is very sad, yet most complaints are all state issues. So we're really trying to raise the bar. By the way, raise against Common Core.
Okay. You know, speaking about Republicans and independents, you know, I got to bring this up. I mean, what do you think about Charlie Crist? I mean, who is going to be... I don't know. I guess he's going to be running against Rick Scott. I guess. Has he officially said he's going to?
He's in.
He's in.
When I left for Afghanistan, he had had the failed run against Rubio.
Right.
And then Alex lost a close race to Rick Scott.
That's right.
So when I come back from Afghanistan, now we pick up to where we are now. So I made a phone call to Charlie, introduced myself, asked if I could come up and talk to him. So when I got up there, the first thing he said was, you know, what can I do for you? Yeah, everybody's looking for something. And I said, I'm not here to get anything. I want to know what I can do for you and kind of see where you are, you know, because he's going to be on the Democratic ticket.
Sure.
And he put it eloquently, and I believe it. He was very popular even as a Republican governor. And he did a lot for education, and he did a lot for a number of things. So, you know, there's good and bad about his administration. But he succinctly said, the party left me. And when he hugged Obama, which, you know, to me, that's politicians should be heroes. Politicians should be looked up to. Politicians should be civil. This mudslinging of things. I'm a naval officer now. Was enlisted.
Sure.
We're going to run this campaign as an officer and a gentleman. We will have just civility and not confuse the issue. But when he hugged Obama, that's when the party turned on him. So I believe he's a public servant first, regardless of where he is, and he's really for the people. And I've met with him several times, and I mean, anybody's an opportunist. If you can get back in and do what you think you do best, absolutely.
Well, you know what? You know, I mean, and that was kind of, you know, part of my question, whether you thought he was an opportunist or not, and that, you know, because, you know, he could be construed as that because, I mean, Rick Scott is not exactly breaking any records in popularity. And if you're going to run against him, you're obviously not going to be a Republican. But, you know, Charlie was, I think, a Republican when, you know, such a thing as a moderate Republican existed, you know.
Sure.
You know, and right now, you know, that whole game has changed, and lots of books have been written about it since, like, 2008 or so, and it all started really before that with Newt Gingrich and the moral majority and, you know, trying to get people to run against government itself, which I always thought was kind of weird, but I digress. You know, let's get down to an issue, though. You know, there was an interesting story in the Sarasota Herald yesterday about how here in Sarasota County, poverty among children has doubled in the 10 years in the decade, starting in 2000, ending in 2010. And I suspect it hasn't gotten any better. You know, did you see that study? And what do you think the government's role should be in such things?
I did see the study. I did read that. And in my position with the courts, I see the homeless on a regular basis, and I see what's happening with the kids. And my first question when I look at this is there's a lot of resources available. We're a very giving community. But when you look at the role of the state, I simply look and I go, right now we have in excess of $800 million as a surplus. Rick Scott's only idea he floated was to give a tax break on registering your vehicles. And he even went to say, which I thought was condescending, that the average Joe will put $12 to $25 back in their pocket. And I look and go, okay, the Forever Fund was raided, and now during election year he wants to put $200,000 back in that. He cut almost $1 billion out of education, but now he wants to put back hundreds of millions of dollars back into education now that it's an election year. And we look at two things which I think are very will tell the moral character of this governor and of the leadership. We have an open position for investigating the abuse of the elderly, and I'm going to get back down to the kids here.
Sure.
We have 122 qualified applicants for that job, yet it's been months since it's been filled, but we know that there's more, three times the abuse occurring in the elderly homes now because there's not as much oversight. That is very concerning. We look at the deaths, and the Department of Children's and Families has noted there's been more deaths now than any recent time, and then you look at the money and the cuts that are being made. You know, when the Republicans in the leadership talks about less government, to me, I was under the assumption the philosophy was less intrusion in everybody's lives. But what's happening is the less government is, we're going to cut services.
Exactly.
You know, so there's not enough money for the Department of Children's and Families. So, you know, if you tell me I have 120 families I have to look out for, no way you're going to catch what's happening. Absolutely not. There's nowhere you're going to catch that, you know, which is just like the VA. You know, you come back, you go to the war, you get hurt, you come back, you get a partial pension because you can't work full-time. Vern Buchanan says, well, guess what? We know there's a two-year backlog. We know there's over 600,000 vets that need care, but we're not going to give more VA workers to solve the problem because we're keeping government less. I mean, the 1% that I talk about isn't the 1% with the money. We're talking the 1% that ever decided to go defend the United States so that
this
could go on.
There are some things government should do. And I mean, I heard one definition of government is that you know, it should do the things that we ourselves individually can't do but need to get done. And these are the kinds of things that need to get done and need to get funded.
Well, you know, it's the four freedoms that FDR talked about. They haven't changed. You should, you know, you shouldn't be for fear of want. You shouldn't be from fear of a good job. You shouldn't be for fear of medical, you know, and fear of freedom.
Yeah. You know, so absolutely. I'll tell you what, you know, we're coming down to the end of it. You want to make a closing statement and then give us your website and how people can get in touch with you.
Well, sure. I'm out meeting and greeting folks. Just like Corey, we're taking endorsements. We're not taking extra money. We owe nobody anything. But I have found that when you get anywhere, if you make somebody else look good and you're not tied to the ego of anything, you can get good ideas passed. So I don't need my name on anything. I never thought to get into politics, but it's something after coming back from Afghanistan that I see is needed for the community, and I'm going to have the courage to go up and do that. And if you look at my opponent's voting record, you're going to see it goes against a lot of things the community is asking for.
Yeah.
So go to votegregpera.com, and you can check out all of the things that we're talking about and all of the issues, and you can see my stance. And not only, you look at any politician's website, they're going to tell you an issue, but they don't give you solutions. You go to my website, and you're going to start seeing my particular solutions that are being given to me by the voters that I'm going to take to Tallahassee. So I will have solutions up there.
Great, Greg. Thanks a lot for coming on. It was great to meet you.
Oh, thank you.
And good luck in November.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Let me just mention one thing, because get my mic working here. That and Ray was in the studio, was talking to him before he was elected, and he mentioned at that point there was a referendum which was passed locally about safe voting here, and that was passed. And he was, when I asked him about it, he said, "Oh, that'll never be implemented. We're going to fight it tooth and nail. We're going to put it through the courts and make sure that this referendum, which was approved by a majority of the voters of Sarasota County, would never be implemented." He was elected. It was fought in the courts. They allocated tremendous amounts of money to do that, and it was never implemented, as he said. Just to remind people of that when they go to vote next time. Okay, thank you so much for tuning in, everybody, and you've been listening to The Surreal News on WSLR. We got some music coming up in here in the background.